going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices and give you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today. Instacart is on a mission to have you not leave the couch this basketball season. Because between the pregame rituals and the postgame interviews, it can be difficult to find time for everything else. So let Instacart take care of your game day snacks or weekly restocks. And get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Because we hear it's bad luck to be hungry on game day. So download the Instacart app today and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first 3 orders. Service fees apply for 3 orders in 14 days. Excludes restaurants.
Ron, good morning. How are you, sir?
Mikey, I'm doing great. Ruthie, how are you guys this morning?
Doing great.
Yeah, we're home, so we're doing fantastic. Yeah. You have been on the road. And I got to tell you, Ron, the relentless nature of this schedule is something altogether different. Obviously, Arizona again coming in here, and then you got the Dodgers again. Like, it just feels like you're playing the best teams of baseball every time you turn around.
It really has been. Since the season has started, the only series that you got kind of where you looked at it and went, well, you know, they're not projected to be a team playing in October was the A's when we went to Sacramento. But, you know, when we went out west, this was really going to be the toughest 2-week stretch of baseball schedule-wise that you thought the Cubs would have maybe all season. So, you know, you find out right away where you stand with the league. You know, we're going to be done with the Dodgers here by the time this homestand is over. We'll be done with Arizona when this homestand is over. And, you know, you've played the Padres, who you expect, who's, you know, so far has been one of the best teams in baseball. So, you know where you stand. And the Cubs are in first place right now, so that's, you know, some real positive stuff, you know, after a schedule where, you know, you're seeing the best teams.
Ron, what was your assessment of the Padres series? Obviously, the first series lost since Tokyo, but as you mentioned, one of the best teams in baseball right now.
Ricky, I thought they played very well. When you go out west, first of all, when you finish 500, and this is some of the best teams I've played on, you're happy with a 500 record when you go out west.
Yeah.
You know, you're not. You want to do better, but when you get on that plane and you're heading back east, and if you're 500 or better, it's been a good trip. I thought the Cubs, I read in Council's, one of the things he was talking about going into this series, that they thought they did very well, but still a little disappointed that you left something, you know, left a game or two out there that you could have had, which is a great way to look at it, and it's the truth. So I thought the series against San Diego was good. They had a chance to win another ball game in that series, but I think some of the guys, you know, PCA played very well.
Yeah.
Some of the young guys are learning on the fly, you might say, and responding pretty well.
Yeah, Bush played well. Some of the young guys, you know, especially some of the California guys back in California. I'm curious. Obviously, you know, we're going to have to – well, I'll wait on Matt Shaw. We'll have to get to that. But I'm very curious, Luke Little – sent right back down, came up, obviously gave up the 4 walks, and now back to Iowa. They haven't announced whatever the other move is, but they did sort of change the pitching rotation a little. I think Colin Rea goes, and then they're giving an extra day to Ben Brown. What do you think as you look at some of the moves in the bullpen? And you know, we always talk about how bullpens change over the course of a year, but that's a very short stint for Luke Little.
Yeah. Well, I just came in, you know, and was misfiring, walked four guys. And I think what's going to happen with the younger guys is if you perform, you're going to be able to stay. But this is a team that's built to win, right? You need to win now. And if you're not going to perform, and I feel for Luke because it's been a long time. He's been banged up and he's been injured. You finally get a chance and it didn't work out. But with his kind of stuff, he's going to get another chance. This isn't like he's sent to the salt mines and you're done for good. He's just got to go figure it out, throw strikes, get back here. And then when he gets another chance, you got to throw the ball over the plate, you know, and that, you know, was part of the reason the Cubs lost the ball game. But the bullpen is figuring itself out, I guess you might say. When the Cubs have the lead, you kind of know where it stands. When they don't have the lead right now, you know, 6th, 7th, 8th, it's shuffling the deck a little bit. And we saw that with some of the moves. Plunkett came in, he's throwing hard and threw strikes and got some outs. So he's been used a couple times already in San Diego. So the non-winning games or games you're ahead is still a little bit of a question mark, but the games are your head, you kind of know where people stand.
And you feel like, Ron, this is an okay time for the Cubs to still sort of be figuring this out. Like, it's still early enough in the season to sort of play around with it and get into a bullpen rhythm.
Ruthie, I think every team does.
Yeah.
I really do. The first month of April, first month of the season, the way teams are set up financially is you set your ball club up and then, you know, the good teams have a solid closer and they might have a really good setup guy. And then you start trying to figure it out. And some teams were able, and the Cubs being one of them, to sign some veteran pitchers. So that really helps that 6th, 7th inning when you're leading. But then when you're not, you know, there's that figuring out stage. And I think the first third of the season, I think you go through that, and almost every team does, and that's where the Cubs are at.
So I'm curious, Ron, were you surprised that Matt Shaw was sent down in as quick a fashion as he was, or is there something in particular that they're looking for him to do before bringing him back? What is your take on the, you know, and I said it to Dustin, he didn't like it, but somehow third base has become this boogeyman position now where they had, what, 7 different players at some point or other last year, all gone, and now you see Matt Shaw. I just felt bad for the kid, but I was wondering, and I've been asking you about this, his unconventional swing, like, it didn't occur to me, like, how do you fix that? Like, what do you do? Like, it's not like you can say one. There's just so many parts to it. What was your take on the whole thing?
Well, I was not surprised that he gets sent down. That's one. This is a league where, you know, performance matters. You're a team that's trying to win, so you've got to get production out of every spot. And if you're not producing, something else has to happen. For Matt, I think he is very unconventional. But some of those, as we've talked about, Mike, some of those things that are unconventional aren't, they're not the end of the world. And it's not so unique that they can't be, you know, they can't be incorporated into a guy's big league approach to hitting. The part that I saw that, you know, there's a couple things that got to happen. One, he's got to find like this baseline of things that I do in my swing that I do every single time that I can go to that are I do this in my setup. I do this in my leg kick. And when I start my swing, this is what I'm trying to accomplish every single time, you know, and a lot of that has to do with your head discipline and your eyes. And I just felt like he's a young player, and he got to the point where, you know, you didn't see any of that. You didn't see where, you know, the normal ABCs that you have to do every time, he was missing some of those. You know, you were seeing different things all the time. And he's just got to go down there and make sure somebody can be there with him to give him some of those things. I was just watching, and you cannot hit in the big leagues when your head is moving as much as his head was moving forward towards the pitcher. You cannot. It does not work. I don't care what the name is on the back of your jersey. You give Ted Williams a chance to hit in his prime and say your head has to move a foot towards the pitcher when you're trying to swing, he's going to hit 200. It's just the way it is. Not going to work. And that's what Matty was falling into, that trap.
Ron, are you surprised, considering just the strength of schedule, which we talked about, and the strength of schedule already that they've faced, are you surprised with the Cubs' offensive production? I just read that they lead the league with 124 runs, and it's 11 more than the Yankees.
Yeah, I'm a little surprised because, you know, you got some teams out there, you know, a team coming into town at the end of this trip, Philadelphia can put some points on the board in a hurry. The Yankees can, you know, teams that bop the ball. The one thing that you knew going into this season is if the Cubs put guys on base, their athleticism was going to be very beneficial. We saw the same thing. We're going to see that in this series coming up against right. Arizona. Both teams very athletic. Both teams are going to run. And if they get key guys, you know, four, five, six guys on, they're going to run. And they're going to be stealing bases. And the Cubs, you know, fell into that a little bit in Los Angeles, where they had the heart of their lineup can all run. And the Dodgers were having a problem holding runners on. And the Cubs ran them out of the game a couple times. You're going to see that. And the Cubs have had a couple ball games also that skew that number a little bit. They had an 18-run game in Sacramento, and I believe a 16-run game in Los Angeles. So, you know, those numbers sometimes can be a little skewed,
yeah.
You know, in how you look at total runs scored. But still scored them, you know, but you've had a couple big, big games.
You know, I'm just curious, Ron, did you feel the earthquake when that thing hit, and had you been in an earthquake before? What happened with that earthquake that hit when you guys were out there?
Yes, I did feel the earthquake. I was sitting at my desk in the hotel room in San Diego, and you know, I'm, you know, Mike, we're Midwest guys.
I know.
When the walls started shaking, man, I'm like, I'm sitting at my desk in the hotel room in San Diego, and all of a sudden, I got a cup of coffee going. It's early in the morning. I'm like, it's okay. And I'm like, wow, that's awfully loud going down the hallway at 7:30 or 8 o'clock in the morning. And then next thing you know, the wall in front of me starts shaking. I'm like,
wow,
damnation, what do we got going on? And then I'm like, then it hit me. I'm like, we're in an earthquake. And the wall's shaking. My lamp is shaking. I'm like,
oh, my goodness.
And I kind of moved away from the desk, and I kind of peeked my head outside. I'm like, well, nobody else is yelling and screaming outside, so I guess we're okay. It was pretty bizarre. I have been in an earthquake a couple different times in California. That was probably the most significant one, I will say. One time I was outside walking, and you felt the ground shake. And then this one was entertaining, I guess you might say. Glad nothing major happened.
God, it's just, and you're so right.
Have you been in an earthquake? Have you been in one?
Listen to this one. We took our kids to Disneyland, okay?
What?
And we were sitting watching the Muppet Show, you know that Muppet Show? Which is a 5D, they call it, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're shooting water on you and stuff. I wasn't following what was going on. I thought the earthquake was part of the
show.
Stick, swear to God. So I'm sitting there, and my daughter is next to me, and my other two kids are with my wife leaving the theater. And I look over, where are they going? I didn't notice the earthquake because I thought it was part of the thing.
Yeah.
So then we ran and caught up with them, and I'm like, were you not going to say something? Didn't you feel it? No. But we left, and then we went back to the room, And the next morning we got, it was a pretty serious one. It was like a six something.
Wow.
And we got up in the morning and we just like went out on the balcony, just my wife and I, talking about what were we going to do. Do we stay here? Do we get out of here? We had another day at Disney. And while we were sitting there, one of the aftershocks hit.
Yeah.
And I, honest to God, I thought we were going to go off the balcony. Like it was really? A serious shake.
Oh my goodness.
And we just got up, packed up, and off we went. We
time
left.
Time to go home.
Yeah. And we drove to Palm Springs or something. Then we came back and had a day there before we finally jumped on a plane. But it was so strange. I'd never, of course, I don't know anything. I'm like, where's a doorway? I think you're supposed to stand in the doorway. You know what I mean? I never experienced anything like it.
Give me a good thunderstorm and we're good, you know?
Yeah.
I'm okay there.
Right. Right.
Yeah, maybe
a little
we'll go,
hail.
Maybe we'll go in the basement think. I just thought it was such a wild weather event to have, or natural event, mm-hmm. I guess, to have happen. Just crazy. I also, Ron, I once covered the Marshawn Lynch game. Do you remember that? The playoff game in Seattle? Uh-huh. Where the crowd cheered so loud, the stadium shook, and they said it registered as like an earthquake.
Whoa.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. But, I remember when that was the World Series, when it was in San Francisco and that earthquake hit.
Yeah.
And, you know, the road came down. I mean, that is like frightening stuff. I would hate to have to
live. I was watching that game. I remember I just had my knee fixed, and I was watching the game. I'd just gotten out of the hospital. I was sitting at a friend's house watching. I'm like, I looked at him, I'll never forget. I go, oh, what the hell just happened? What's wrong with your TV? You know, boom, it was out, right? Yes. Uh-huh.
I was working at the paper, and young Joe Goddard called in with his story. Joe, longtime baseball writer, the late Joe Goddard. And Joe, I said to him, like, Joe, are you okay? He said the minute it hit, he crawled under the desk in the press room. He said all these people were standing up and looking. He just went for cover. I'm like, you're a wise man.
Yeah. I think that's what they say. Go get under the desk.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
But anyway, this is a wild thing. Back to the Cubs. So when you look at this right now, you know, Ruthie mentioned it, the first series loss since Japan. Now you come home, and again, the opponents don't get any easier, but the trip home probably does. You probably feel good about the road trip. We've talked a lot about what the expectations are for this team in this particular stretch. Does being at home make it easier to deal with a difficult schedule? In other words, you know, coming back and getting in your own bed and getting out to the ball yard and having the fans behind you, does that make this series, I don't want to call it easier, but it makes it more manageable?
I would say yes. You never know how this series is going to turn out, but I just think every player, just finally being home. I think the team has been on the road between leaving to get to Arizona by minimum. And, second week of February, you've been home. You went to Japan and you're home for 6 days back out west again. So I think everybody's going to be happy to get in the normal time zone, right? The Midwest time zone, get normal sleep, be in your own house, go to Wrigley Field where you're familiar. I do think that is a big advantage. But, you still got to play the game, so you don't know how the games are going to turn out. But I do think guys are ready to just be home and kind of settle into the season, I always like to say. Once you get a good long homestand and, you're there for a while and you're not leaving right away, you can kind of settle in. And that's what's going to happen here in this next 10 days with a couple off days at home.
Ron Coomer on The Score is sponsored by Huntington, home of early pay. More at huntington.com/yourmoney. Ron, thank you, buddy. Always a joy.
Thanks, Ron.
Hey, have a great weekend, Mikey, Ruthie. Great to talk to you guys. I will talk to you next week, bud.
All righty. That is Ron Coomer.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building a life.
For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at brag-worthy prices at your DSW store or DSW.com.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality but never overpriced. Visit DollarShaveClub.com and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more.
You know, it's a strong opinion to just get talent. I think the NFL is so difficult in part because we look at the Bears and we say, look, they filled five new starters. They completed the offensive and defensive line. And you look at it and you say, well, like, let's look at ages, let's look at years. Dolman probably is like a long-term guy. Maybe you don't need to draft a center now because you did sign one. But you've got to get your depth to a point where if there's an injury or if somebody is going to retire in a year or two, you've got someone that is ready to step in and be like a really strong stalwart. I think that you can't draft enough defensive linemen ever. You can't draft enough pass rushers, even if you spend a draft doing it.
No doubt.
That's just that position is so important. And I feel the same way about the offensive line, especially the with the left tackle position that the Bears are in right now. And everyone argues about this. Braxton Jones would be fine. He'd be ready to go. No, he won't. He's not going to be there for the start of camp, right? He doesn't get an off season. He's coming off an injury. You know, I think the frankness is appreciated from the head coach, Ben Johnson, who says, oh, yeah, we need to put more weight on him because we got to improve his anchor.
Yeah.
That's very true. The problem is he just had surgery. He's coming off that. How do you put weight on a guy who needs to keep his weight down so he can heal what his injury is?
And then get him on the practice field and recuperated and up to speed and then ready to play in a game in week one. And listen, like, this idea of, oh, they'll be fine. Like, isn't Chicago tired of being fine at premium positions? Like, at some point, if you are serious about actually winning football games in October and November and December, you need to be more than fine. And you need to be very ambitious with how you put your roster together. And so, yeah, sure, they shored up the interior of the offensive line. Make the left tackle position stronger. Go look in the draft and see if you can find a guy that can compete and maybe come in and give you some things there. The other thing that you bring up that I think is absolutely paramount to keep at the center of the conversation is the roster looks pretty good for 2025. When you start looking at 2027, is Grady Jarrett still starting in 2027? Is Joe Tooney still starting for the Bears in 2027? We don't know. And so, like, the responsibility of a general manager, and in this case, a general manager head coach union, has to be building the roster for now, but also being very cognizant of what's ahead and trying to make sure that you are finding answers both for the now and for the future. And so that's why I think next week is pretty significant, particularly as we've talked about a lot with those four picks in the top 75.
Yes.
Go get guys. Like, you know, we have the Kyler Gordon extension this week. It's the first player that Ryan Poles has gotten to a second contract.
Drafted and now paid.
Developed and, yes, and paid, right? And, like, you need to do more of that because the book closed on Ryan Pace when Tevin Jenkins went elsewhere, and it was eight players over seven drafts that they drafted and got to a second contract. One of those was Tariq Cohen, who never played on the second contract because he got hurt. And another one was Deion Bush, who was just signing a bunch of one-year deals to be a special teamer. You need to find guys in this draft, four picks, top 75, that are going to be here in 5 years. Like, that's the goal.
Yes. And I mean, the other thing is, when you look at different positions, you know, what is the greatest need for the Bears? It's probably left tackle. They need one. Are there any available? There are guys that are big, strong guys that might be able to switch from one side to the other. There are guys that that probably don't deserve to go at 10 that could play that position. So I'm not sure that you're going to get the left tackle in this draft. I think that Campbell will probably be gone by the time you pick.
Calvin Banks Jr. is probably the other option.
Yes. And I like that option, but he's a younger guy. He's a junior coming out. I just don't know whether or not that's a guy that you draft and start, or whether he needs more time as well. So it is difficult to look at their greatest need. Do they need a running back? I believe they do.
Yes.
If they get Ashton Jeanty, is that an upgrade? I need a 40 time for him. I know that's a crazy problem to have. I just can't get past it. I want to know. I think his numbers after contact are incredible.
Yeah.
He also played at a lower level. And, you know, when his team met Penn State, he wasn't getting a lot of yards after contact.
Yeah, right.
He got stymied, stuffed in that game. That bothers me. If he's as good as people believe, that's great. Take him. You'll be so much better. I think that the coach might want him. Who knows? The same thing with the tight end. You got a pretty good tight end here. I don't know why they don't use him more. He seems like he could be a weapon if you used him more. But he is not the kid in Detroit. He's not the kid that's making all these big plays and getting you the third downs. That you know, it's frustrating that hasn't worked out as well as it should. It's just weird that it doesn't. And I think this guy can do good things with him. But if they get the kid from Penn State,
right,
that's awesome. That kid is so good. And he can block a little bit and you know, better.
Versatile.
Very good player.
Total chess piece. And then
I'd like to see a 40 on him. I think he's like in the 4s, 6s, 7s. I'm just saying.
He's not a guy that's going to separate naturally.
Never.
But he's going to do a lot of things with the ball in his hands and be one of those strong physical guys that can be dynamic for you. I think the Michigan tight end is every bit as good. It's a very different player, Colson Loveland.
Mm-hmm.
But he's a guy that you can use as a receiving threat.
Yes.
And you can make him into a player that defenses have to pay attention to. What I liked hearing from Ben Johnson down at the owners' meetings a couple weeks ago when it relates to the running back discussion is not getting caught up with, oh, it's a running back, it's a running back, it's a running back. He views it as a weapon. You know, so, okay, are we going to try to add weapons to our offense? I don't care what position they play. If it's a weapon that's going to help us score points and be somebody that every single down a defense has to be aware of that then makes life easier on our quarterback, who's obviously, we all know, the linchpin of this entire thing, then we seriously consider it, right? Like, and so like, I have zero issue with the consideration of picking Ashton Jeanthi at 10, even going up to 8. If you feel like you have an urge and like this is the absolute must-have guy for what we're trying to do offensively, go for it.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I feel the same way about the tight end. I have a feeling of trust about the coach. I'm not going to get too worried about it, but I do look at that offensive line, and I do want it to get better.
Yeah.
And I do think they need competition with some of those veteran guys. And I don't think Ryan Bates is the answer.
He certainly wasn't.
He's your depth piece.
And you traded for him, and you had great faith going into last season that you had the requisite depth to get you through a year. And then depth on the offensive line was one of the top three reasons that the season fell apart.
The kid got sacked
68
times.
Yeah.
Okay, so if you're going to fix the offense, you got to kind of start with that idea. Now, Keenan Allen is gone. You know, Keenan Allen didn't have a great year, but that guy is like so steady, third down machine type
crafty
of guy. And you know, the quarterback seemed to like him. I disagree with Dustin. I think they could use a receiver. I don't think you take a receiver there, but I think they could use another receiver.
If they took one in the first 2 days, I would not be upset about it. Like, because I do think you need depth there as well.
How do you feel about taking offense 1 year and taking defense next year? Are we set up trying to convince ourselves that the new offensive coach needs to get guys to have his offense? Or do we say to ourselves, geez, you know, they got a chance to get a great defensive piece that could really help everybody on the defense and really change the way they play defense? And I wonder if that's something that they would even consider. I know they brought in a couple of pass rushers. I think if they came away, this is my problem with predicting the draft. I think they need a lot, and I think if they came away with a guy, whether it's and there aren't many inside guys available in the draft.
Right.
If they get an inside guy, that makes them 10 times better. If they get a pass rusher who can really, you know, be relentless at that craft, that makes them better. I'm all for it. I have no problem with what they do at 10 if they wind up going defense.
No. And so, like, Mason Graham for me is the dream scenario defensively. And
he'll
if he
gone, though,
falls,
right?
And like, that's another guy that if he's around at 8, like, I'm getting on the phone and saying,
and
hey,
up and
do you want our 3? You know, like, can we go up? You know, what's it going to take to get up 2 spots there? Bears obviously moved down a couple years ago in the trade with Philly that brought them Darnell Wright, and the Eagles got Jalen Carter. And so you know what the cost of that is, moving one slot right around that point of the draft board. But Graham is one of those guys that you plug into a defense. I get it. He's a little undersized, and you're trying to figure it out. But instinctually, the leverage that he plays with, the ability to be a constant difference maker in the interior of the defensive line, you run that pick in if it's there for you to make. These are the cool times inside a building, the last 2 weeks to 10 days before a draft, because now all these scenarios can be put in a conference room and you can argue them, right? Like, this position coach can fight for this guy,
yes,
and this coordinator can fight for this guy, and Ryan Poles, and with Ben Johnson at his side, have to look at, again, that menu and decide, okay, what is the choose-your-own-adventure we want here? And you mentioned a little earlier, you also have to be aware of the depth at each position, saying,
Huge. If you don't get to take a running back, you're going to get a really good one.
You still got an opportunity.
There's going to be a seriously good player when you are on the board again, because it's not that far away. But I think it's difficult for teams, generally speaking, to improve positions they think they're okay at.
Yeah.
It's not good enough to be okay. You got to get better, and you got to get better. You could surprise people by getting better. If this guy is there, you could get seriously better by drafting him, and that might mean that one of the guys that you like is now in a secondary role, and that includes Cole Kmet if that happens, because I think he's a good player. But if they got one of these like stud tight ends, that kid from Penn State is just a monster.
Well, and like with Cole, Cole's been here now 5 seasons. his urge to be successful in Chicago trumps his urge to be featured, right? Like, yes. Like Cole Kmet yes. wants to see the Chicago Bears break through this longstanding mediocrity that they've been stuck in. And so, like, if he has to take on a slightly lesser role and block more and not get the football as much, but they win 10 games, like, he will be the happiest guy in the city. And he knows the spoils that'll come with that.
Can they win 10 games?
They can. Now, like, Big Z and I talk about this a lot. Like, you go through their schedule. Like,
that
schedule's got some teeth to it.
Yeah. You know, this idea that Jalen Johnson is following guy. Do you see the guys he's going to be following?
You're right, right.
It's a hell of a difficult group of receivers that he's facing.
We're going to get to hear from Dennis Allen later this week, Thursday, at Halas Hall. And one of the questions that I have for him is, what's the philosophy on traveling? And how do you do that in a responsible way? You know, where you're not asking a guy for 17 games every single play to be exerting energy, right? And one of the reasons, like, people always got upset about this the last few years, like, when you're a zone-based team like Matt Eberflus like to run, you can't travel a guy because all they have to do is slide, Davante Adams in the slot, and now Jalen Johnson's got to play slot corner, you know, and that's not his preferred position. It's exactly a totally different game.
And that's a good point. I think, you know, we were talking about it a little bit yesterday. The problem with having a guy that's traveling is you're telling the offense exactly how you're lining up. You're giving them, okay, he's here. That means they're in man. That means you're not hiding anything. And I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of people that like to hide things. I still, you know, Dustin mentioned during the pick six about Jaquan Brisker. That's a really difficult decision there because I like him a lot. I think he's a hell of a player. But he's right. One hit could change his that could be the end of his career. And that's awful. And you don't want to tell someone, hey, whatever you do, make sure you don't get a concussion because he needs to be able. He needs to be the brick that he is when he comes up as a run stuffer.
It's been every season,
every
with
one,
him.
three years,
and each one of them has been a little bit
worse,
and like one of those ones where it's like he plays. You know, I remember in Atlanta a few years ago where he was evaluated twice and returned to the game twice, and then by Tuesday he's in the concussion protocol. Yeah. And he's not playing again, and so when you have this history of that. I love Jaquan. He's a well-intentioned dude that like is passionate about succeeding and winning. But man, there's some life questions that you have to answer when you've been through this now for a handful of consecutive years. And the Bears obviously can't bank on him staying healthy for a full season and getting to a second contract with them. And so you've got to start to line yourself up with contingency plans.
I can't wait to really see what Ben Johnson wants to do with this offense, because I think a lot of it, you know, we sit here and we just generally say, well, he's going to get the quarterback better. He's going to get and then he is saying, well, we're going to run play action.
That's it.
I think play action would help this guy quite a bit. I also think it's a difference and there's a change and he's no longer kind of the guy in the shotgun. And I'm not sure how he feels about that.
This is where this experimental process of the next 2 months is going to be so key for them, because I think Ben believes very strongly that an under center running game is the best thing for the football team. The first step is getting your quarterback comfortable with that. And if you can get that installed and you can get Caleb understanding that, okay, if I can just work through this and grind through this and become a little bit more polished coming out from under center, it should change the way we run offense. Now, does it fit him, right? And like, so this is a question you hear from some people that are just like a little bit head scratching with the whole thing, is like, does this turn out that like Caleb just doesn't fit that and you've got to go back to a more shotgun based system, and now all of a sudden you have a mismatch of head coach preference and quarterback, and we're right back in the same awful cycle that the Bears are always in. But look, like I think there's an opportunity here to unlock some things really quickly, and I think Ben has vocalized and shown the urgency of what these next set of mini camp practices and OTAs, and then the last mini camp before you break, it means a lot towards getting yourself a vision for reporting to training camp. Because if you go and vocalize that we're going to win and we're going to win now, you can't go into training camp being like, oh, we're going to figure some things out over these next 6 weeks. No, you've got to be in a mode to get yourself on the runway.
I agree with you. I think, we're talking about offensive line, defensive line, right there, they're about four positions. But then you start talking about the secondary. I'm very intrigued by what Al Harris can do with Tyreek Stevenson, because I think there's a lot of talent there, but I think there's other issues, and there's kind of – they're going to have to fix whatever is broken or fractured within that his relationship, not just with the team and teammates, but – with football, with the game. How does he play it? How's he going about it? They're changing something with him. I hope they can do that, but I would also want to have some cover. I think you do with Terrell Smith, but
yeah,
it's difficult.
So this is a conversation I had last week with someone elsewhere in the league about whether the Bears consider corner at 10. We haven't talked about it at all for the last 3 months. It's been a discussion that has not existed.
Kid from Michigan, the kid from Texas,
yep,
right? Those two players, because you figure Colorado guy's long gone. Yeah.
And the kid from Michigan, traits there.
Yep.
And then the question is, does he have the top end speed? Is he, is he going to fit the aggressive style that DA likes to play? That's a question there. With Tyreek Stevenson, he came in with volatility. And it was like, okay, can you get his passion channeled in the right direction? Can you live with a couple of the boneheaded penalties where he gets a little bit excited after the whistle and costs you 15 yards? And now you've got the scarring from Washington last year, and you've got to figure out how Al Harris and Dennis Allen help him work through that, because he's an eternal meme, right?
It's
a viral, he'll never live that down. Yeah. And so now you've got to figure out a way to work around that.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hey everyone, quick shout out to Whole Foods Market. You know I'm all about eating fresh and finding quality ingredients, and that's exactly what Whole Foods delivers. Whether you're grabbing organic produce, high quality meats, or just a quick healthy snack, they've got you covered. Plus, they're all about sustainability and supporting local farmers, which I love. Next time you're grocery shopping, check them out. You'll taste the difference. Spring is the perfect time to refresh your table, and Whole Foods Market has everything you need. Hosting brunch? Picture this. Flaky, buttery quiche, crispy bacon, fresh berries, and of course, cold-pressed orange juice to brighten up your morning. And if you're in the mood for something fizzy, check out their seasonal Italian sodas. Berry Blend and Orange Hibiscus are total must-tries. So whether you're planning a casual get-together or a full-on feast, Whole Foods Market has you covered. Make Whole Foods Market your destination for all spring gatherings.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps. Restrictions apply.
Today's podcast is sponsored by Midi Health. At any given time, 61% of adult women say they want to lose weight. But for many, that's easier said than done. If you've had trouble losing weight, don't lose hope. Midi Health uses a deep understanding of women's hormones and a combination of weight loss medications to create a customized plan for each user. Midi Health can help you achieve more effective and sustainable weight loss by addressing hormone imbalances. Midi can also prescribe proven weight loss medications that help you experience reduced appetite and increased feelings of fullness. When paired with hormone optimization, you're not just managing your weight, you're also supporting your body's natural processes, which means you can overcome those weight loss plateaus that in the past have been so difficult to move beyond. So if you're ready to combine the power of hormones with the power of weight loss medications, visit joinmidi.com today. Discover how this innovative approach can lead you to lasting success. That's joinmidi.com.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. David's on vacation, and Ruthie Polinsky, kind enough to fill in for him today. And you'll be here tomorrow as well.
Looking I will.
At least we're now stabilized a little bit. We've been all over the board. It's been a ton of fun. And I got to tell you, you know, you hear Chuck talk about the end of the Bulls game. And it was a game that ended so much earlier than that end. Like you get to a point where it was such a bad loss. It exposed so much of their failings that I believe it now will impact the off season. That it's the kind of thing that leaves a mark. It was a loss that will resonate beyond what the one game meant. It's a loss that kind of puts everything we saw from the try-hard team, the work-hard Bulls, into question. And we're no longer going to be sitting here talking about, whoa, wow, how about, wasn't it great at the end of the year when they won all those games? I think we're going to be like, hey, that's not good enough. That's not good enough.
And if they would have lost to the Heat and maybe like, a one score, you know, three point game. You know, they had a chance at the buzzer. Like maybe you would have been like, oh, that was still really cool. The future's bright. But I think you're right. I think what happened last night and the embarrassment, for lack of a better term, makes everyone sort of stare what happened in the face and say, okay, we can't let this happen again. You hope.
The Bulls are not a middling team. They are a try hard version of one of the worst teams in the league. So they tried very hard, and they've got some younger players. And all that means is that they want to win, and they want to play, and they got energy, youthful energy, and they don't understand how far out of contention they are. And it was interesting because Billy was asked in the postgame, Billy Donovan, the head coach, I think it was Joe Colley who asked him about the fact that everyone believes the same thing, that they need a superstar player, that they're missing that great player. And let's take a listen.
One of the things I think has changed a little bit over the course of the NBA was it was quote unquote, you have to have three guys. Right. But I think what's happened now is because of the pace of the game and the speed of the game, sometimes having three guys like that financially doesn't allow you to kind of build out your team.
Right.
To your point, absolutely. You look at any great team, they have a guy that's really, really elite. You know what I mean? And you can go, and I mean, and a lot of times it's, you know, in the backcourt. You know, Brunson's obviously been great in New York. Shea's been great in Oklahoma City. Van Fleet's really helped. You know, you can go, Curry, you can kind of go down the list. And I'm not saying he needs to be a backcourt player, but, you know, I think Kobe made a really, really good jump wherever he gets to. I don't know. Josh made a good jump as well. But to your point, you know, the guys that you're talking about, that is. And I'm sure those will be all things that the front office will take a look at as they go into the draft and into, you know, free agency and all those things. So I don't disagree with you because that's kind of been the case. I just think what's changed maybe is it used to be
the number
of guys you needed.
You know, another thoughtful answer from Billy.
Always.
A good answer. I wasn't going there with that, but he's right. It used to be you just got the big three, and then you could fill in around them. And the game has changed a little bit, so you need guys. You need guys that can shoot the basketball. You need guys that can score. Guys that can defend. You know what you need if you're the Bulls. I mean, and I don't want to be so obvious about it, but you need a front court. You know, Vooch is a he's an older player now. He's got one more year left on his deal. He could stay here for another year. Not sure why, but you know, Patrick Williams. This has just been really bad. I mean, they drafted him. What was that? Was that the third pick in the draft? The fourth pick? It was the third, I believe. Right, fourth, and that was a three-player draft, and they got the fourth pick, and they got the wrong guy because I'm not dismissing him as a player. I guess I am. It just hasn't worked. And it doesn't show signs that it's going to turn around, and you paid him too much money. So you got a bad contract that you can't move there. Who do they have in the front court that you really would say, well, there's a lot of hope with that guy? You know, Collins, that was
well. Is Matas a front court player, or is he like a point forward kind of guy? That's the question. Right. I mean, it's different.
He's not
at crucial moments. He's not going to have the ball in his hands coming up the court. But I've seen him many times.
He can dunk. He can operate around the rim, but he can block shots. But he's not a rim protector.
No.
I'm saying just from a standard. Like NBA, the difference between the backcourt guys and the frontcourt guys. Now, you know, Josh Giddey is what, 6'9"? He can get a rebound for you. Mm-hmm. He's a pretty good rebounding guard. But, like, they don't...
But also kind of a turnstile.
Yeah.
I mean, he set the tone. Yet, like, what was the first play of the game last night?
They could have used Smith. He was hurt last night, Dustin.
Doesn't have anything to do with defense.
Okay.
Get in the way. Move your feet. Get in the way.
That's fair.
I mean, literally, I mean, he...
Listen, I can't defend anything from... Much like the Bulls. I can't defend anything from last night.
That was well done, Molly. Well, you are extra sharp today. Extra sharp. Always sharp, but extra sharp this morning. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, it just set the tone. We joked around in the past. We've talked about Billy Donovan calling those early timeouts. It was 10-5.
Oh, I know.
And he had to call a timeout last night.
They did.
10-5.
But Dustin, they were... I wonder, they're a young team. Were they intimidated by the moment? They were not ready to play. They were never ready to play.
And again, it goes back to like, and there's a lot of out-of-town ignorant, I guess. I won't use the other word, out-of-town ignorant or out-of-town not well. A lot of calling for Billy Donovan's job this morning.
Oh, no.
Out-of-town on a national level.
I think
right?
Billy, they're going to fire him after making the Hall of Fame?
I can't blame him for guys not moving their feet and getting in – position.
I can't blame him for the quality of the talent that they've put together on this team.
And say, also, what's the answer? Everybody wants a finger this morning. Everybody wants to point a finger.
Where do you point it?
I know. I was thinking about this. Olin talked about this on your show yesterday about, and I know it's different sports, but it's the same concept of, you know, coaches can only do so much. Like, players lead. Like, you need players in that locker room to lead and set the tone. And don't get me wrong, I think there's potential there. But, like, who is the leader for the Bulls right now? Like, who is the guy that is going out there and setting the tone and saying, move your, and yelling at everyone, his teammates in the huddle? Like, there's no one that's really there to, like, bring you back in and say, guys, like, let's rally together. Billy can only do so much, and I understand that people want to blame someone, but when you look at what Billy did with that group after the trade deadline,
that was pretty
good. I mean, that's pretty unbelievable.
But they also, the whole year, they changed their style of play.
Yes,
they're playing more of an NBA game. They're getting more, and then you get people saying, well, why didn't they do that 2 years ago? Why didn't they do? Well, because they had different players, and you couldn't really have DeMar DeRozan play that game, right? Yeah. That wouldn't suit what his skill set was. They just were set up differently.
Right.
And, I mean, who signed Lonzo Ball to the contract extension? Was that Billy? Who signed Patrick Williams to that contract, the $90 million? That's not Billy. Like, you know, I just I feel like it's fair game to talk about the quality of the players, and it's fair game to talk about what you know, whether if you believe that that management has hit a wall and can't get this team any better, if you think that you've already given them a shot and you don't want to go for another shot, and I understand all that. I understand all the complaints that are coming, but I don't know that it was about coaching. And in fact, I think the problem was the guy coached them too well, so they couldn't really fall apart when they should have fallen apart. Mm. The other thing, like, you know, like I said, they're kind of one of these middling teams, but the problem is they're worse than that. And we were almost convinced they were a middling team and they're one guy away. They might be worse than we even are imagining. It's pretty bad. That was, you know, I mean, what are you supposed to, who'd they go to? Talen Tucker? You know, that's your move?
And again, now, that guy.
Personnel. He did okay.
He touches the ball. You never see it again.
They weren't scoring and they weren't doing it. But my point is, that's the guy you're going to off the bench. That you got a bad bench. I'm not picking on him because, like I said, you know, that's kind of his role. If you were him, you try to come in.
I would do the same thing too,
to
try to cement myself as a scorer in this league. Right. Yes.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. No, it's, yeah. It's,
but they got to do something.
Have to. But the question is, what do you do? Who do you have to give up, potentially? How much money are you going to spend? Is Giddey going to be here for years to come? Are you going to pay him what this season, arguably, he earned?
Well, I think that's where I'm with you 100% on the Giddey thing is the question. I think Coby White kind of, that was a statement game and not a good one for him last night. I mentioned this yesterday. Like, he needed to be 25 plus.
Yes.
And then the whole idea, just from the broadcast. Yes. I mean, when Chuck Swirsky talks about, you know, just so everybody on the listening audience knows, you know, Coby likes to ease his way in. You don't ease your way into win or go home games. You don't ease your way into win or go home games. There's no time to ease into it, get others involved. No. Uh-uh. No.
Well, I mean, the problem is that Miami wasn't easing their way into it. They were scoring and scoring and scoring, and you weren't doing anything.
Right, they set the tone immediately, right?
But you didn't do anything to dissuade that tone. You didn't change that tone. You didn't. The whole game was played at their pace, at their terms. Mm-hmm. And you had what? Four breakaway points in that first half, and you allowed 71 points?
Right, and all the turnovers, right? All the turnovers you had.
How do you win that game? I mean, you win it because Miami stops playing in the fourth quarter, and they had those troubles. You know, all you had to do, you had to keep that game close so you could take over in the fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. That's been their bugaboo.
Yeah.
And, you know, you couldn't even do that. You couldn't. It was so pathetic. It was such a bad effort.
I'm saying this now, but obviously in the fourth quarter, I was sitting there being like, they could pull this off. Like, I was like, they've done it. You tell yourself in that moment, you're like, we've been here before. We can still win this game. But it didn't feel like that light switch ever went off. Like, you were just sort of waiting for, like, the momentum to shift and for the Bulls to just take over the game. And they couldn't do it.
Sad. So they had that Thursday night game where they beat the Lakers, and that was kind of the highlight of the season, right? And then they played again. It was Saturday, and we went to that game and went down and listened to Billy before the game, and he was asked about it because there was more media than usual, and I think they were playing Dallas. Dallas was in town, and I believe it was Anthony Davis back in Chicago, that kind of thing. And so he said the problem with winning that way is that you needed, and he rattled off all the things that went right at the end of that game, so they won that game. And he basically said that if one of those things hadn't gone right, then you're not going to win that game. And that's one of the things we talked to the players about, is just this idea that it wasn't just a guy hitting a half-court shot. It was, I believe Patrick Williams hit a three-pointer earlier in that sequence. Kobe hit a three-pointer after Josh Giddey got a steal. There were all these things that happened, and then you end up with this buzzer-beating half-court shot. And his point was that you can't play basketball and expect all that to happen. And that game, they came roaring back in the fourth quarter, and they were threatening. They lost that game by a point, but they were down big in the fourth quarter. And I think Vooch missed a free throw. And that's when the score got, like, you know, it got back to one, and they couldn't get the lead. And it just, you know, that was the end of it, basically, that missed free throw. And it was exactly what he had said before the game, that, like, you can't expect everything to go right. And that's kind of going through my head as I'm watching the fourth quarter. They, you know, there was a moment there, just like a quarter of a second. But then one of those announcers, like, you know, you feel like the Bulls are playing better, but they're still down whatever it was, 17 points. And I was kind of like, yeah, this would take a monumental failure from Miami. And in order to get that, you needed to start this particular push earlier, maybe the first half.
Mm. Yeah. I was still the optimist there, Molly.
Yeah, that's good.
I was holding on for dear life.
But even if they won that game, I think I'd be sitting here now like,
all right, off to Atlanta.
Exactly.
I really think I was just rooting for a win because I knew I had to come here this morning and I wanted it to
it would be
more
you
positive.
The show to be fun.
With all the team, the baseball, both baseball teams lost. I was like, come
You're
on,
so
Bulls.
Right.
Just make my job fun.
But from that huge deficit at halftime and won that game,
right.
I think you could have also spun it that was a wake-up call.
Hmm.
Okay.
Okay. Even if you...
Now they're ready to
if you
go
win,
to Cleveland.
If you win in Atlanta... But here, if you win in Atlanta and then you get the right to get your you-know-what handed to you in Cleveland, but now you've got some games under your belt. Now you could get what Billy was selling, which was this experience matters.
Yeah.
I mean, how much of last night's game will end up mattering in the career of Matas Buzelis? Because he's the only guy that had never been there and done that of any merit, right?
Well, how old is Giddey? He's still very young.
Oh, no, but he's been in the playoffs.
Yeah.
I'm just saying
he hasn't been there as the featured guy. He's been there as more of a support guy, and he didn't even make their rotation last year, right? They took him out of the starting lineup.
They did, right? They got rid of a guy. They had enough offense, and they traded for a guy that the last guy that played defense in Chicago on the Bulls to the Thunder, right? That was Caruso.
Yeah.
You know, right? So, I mean, we'll see how that works out now that they're going to get to the playoffs, obviously. They're the number one seed in the West, right? The Thunder.
I just don't know that there's a solution for the Bulls in the offseason.
Right. You know, what is it? What are the options? Okay, here's option A. Da-da-da-da. Here's option A.
Win the draft.
Here's option C.
Hopefully Casey Johnson can lay that out for us.
Lay us some out. Because their other talk is that Coby White is, you know, going to test free agency because there's more money for him to be made. But is there really? Like, who? Okay, if not here, where? Who's looking? Well, who's in the market for a Coby White at $190 million?
Well,
I want to know who that team is.
I think guys get paid a lot of money in the NBA.
Sure.
And I think if you look at Kobe's game, I get it. He's not like the all-star lead dog player, but he's a good player and he can score.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a gift. And he can knock down a three and he could help a lot of different teams, Dustin. He could. He could be.
I'm just saying, I'm very curious to hear from Casey and Cody about what the Coby White market is, especially after last night.
We won't hold you for any longer. We will take a quick time out, and we'll bring in Casey.
See,
Johnson,
you're the gift that keeps on giving.
And
Thank you
will hear from him, and we will ask him the questions that you demand answers to. This one's for Dustin. It's for you, buddy.
Biggs Report with Brad Biggs.
Biggs time.
Biggsy.
His name is Brad Biggs.
Brad Biggs talks football with you.
Mully A. Brad Hall, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Ruthie Polinsky kind enough to sit in for David this morning. And here is a full cycle moment here where our guy who started the week will help us close it out. Brad Biggs joins us on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, Aturo.com. He, of course, is the great football man of the Chicago Tribune and a longtime contributor to the station and a valued friend. Big Z!
Morning, gang. What's going on?
I told Biggs yesterday at Hallis Hall that I loved him on the radio on Monday filling in, and I think he should do it more.
He's excellent. There's no doubt about it. And it's a little embarrassing to have people like, why isn't Biggsy in? Why are you here? It was a bad reaction. You ruined my reputation as a radio guy, Brad. I hope you're happy. John Heyman wants to talk some baseball.
I'm looking forward to David's return, though, from I'm sure he's in Indiana.
Oh, I think he was going to go to Indy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was.
What else would one do? So help us out here, Brad. You know, we were having a nice conversation earlier this morning about the things that kind of stood out to you. Was there any singular moment or anything said? I really liked hearing Dennis Allen call the improvements on the defensive line a good start, because we all know that you could justify taking a defensive end in every draft, a defensive tackle in every draft. You love having those guys, and you can never have enough of them.
Yeah, that's exactly what it's got to be as a start. Like, who are we kidding? They didn't play well defensively last year. Mm-hmm. They were poor in most areas. They were somehow good in the red zone when they struggled with a lot of other things, but they played poorly enough last year defensively to look at it and say, hey, they need some talent upgrades. Like, the idea that scheme is going to fix offense and fix defense is really a mistake, I think. You know, and I thought Declan Doyle said something interesting yesterday. Not to change the subject, but he said, you know, it's not like Ben Johnson's scheme is what's going to propel the Bears. It's a commitment to the fundamentals mm-hmm. of the players. You know, that it's the playbook isn't what's winning. The play calling isn't what's winning. It's execution of the fundamentals on the plays that are being called. So they still need to gather some more talent on both sides of the ball, and then they need to be more fundamentally sound to be a better football team. This is a 5-win football team. There's a lot of room for improvement.
Brad, I'm so curious. I felt like yesterday was the first time we got to see the new coaching staff sort of as a whole, as a picture, and it has such a wide variety of coaches, young coaches like a Declan Doyle. You have veteran coaches, former head coaches on the staff, and also, of course, all the former players. What's your assessment of just kind of the way the group is coming together? I think it's so interesting. Ben Johnson hasn't worked with a lot of these guys previously, but it just feels like a nice group that already has sort of a camaraderie building.
Yeah, I think probably one of the goals was getting a wide variety.
Yeah.
And you talked about younger guys, older guys, guys from different backgrounds, guys from the pro level, guys from the college level. Because mm-hmm. when you look at your locker room, I think you often see, well, hey, we got this wide collection of guys for regionally, age-wise, you know, different backgrounds, whatever it is. So I think when your coaching staff can reflect that, that helps out. Like, they've got, you know, Jeremy Garrett's the defensive line coach, primarily a college guy. So he, maybe you're hiring him thinking this is a guy that has teaching ability, can connect with younger players. But you know what? He's paired with a salty veteran there in coaching some of these D-linemen, so you've kind of got yin and yang there. That's how it appears they've designed it. you know, how it's going to work out, we've got no idea. But I enjoyed being able to kind of bounce around the room a little bit, chat with some of the different coaches, and just sort of hear philosophy or what they think about current players, or just hearing from in general, kind of trying to get a feel for them. Like I said from the jump, I think Al Harris helping out the DBs is going to be a terrific addition for the organization.
I'm probably linking things that shouldn't be linked, but I thought it was really interesting that, you know, Jalen Johnson has talked about traveling and covering the best receiver and staying with them. And then you heard yesterday from Dennis Allen talking about hoping to see maybe more playing time, adding another position to what the nickelback is doing. You know, very interesting that he likes Kyler Gordon and thinking of different ways of using him, whether it's not in the slot, whether it's at corner, whether it's at a safety position. I thought that, and it made me wonder, and you brought up Al Harris, but where are they with Tyreek Stevenson? Because there hasn't been a lot of talk about that. And it wasn't like, well, we got to figure out how to fix Tyreek. Maybe it's just a subject that people find unpleasant, not as positive, but it's just the absence of talk of him was interesting to me.
Yeah, I chatted briefly with Al, and I know that came up, the Tyreek Stevenson question came up for him, and he said that Tyreek was one of the favorite players in that draft class from, 2023 now, that took a top 30 to the Dallas Cowboys when Al was there, thought that he really connected with Tyreek. The makeup, the background, just kind of his authentic way. Like, Tyreek will tell you what's on his mind. And so I got the impression I was really looking forward to getting out on the field with Tyreek. Feels like there's a lot of talent there. So you can desire both, right? And that's for Tyreek to take the necessary step forward in terms of consistency, performance, production, attention to detail, all that in year three, and want Kyler Gordon to have the versatility to be available more often. We know that he played outside and inside as a rookie, and after that kind of focused on the nickel, which that makes sense. If you want him to become an elite nickel player, let him keep his entire focus and energy right there. Let him become one of the better ones at that position in the league. I don't know that he's the best. He's the highest paid now. And so he's one of the best. There's no question about that. But, you know, seek some opportunities to have him in the mix some more. But I don't believe in any way, shape, or form they're writing off Tyreek. Like, that, short of them using the 10th pick on a cornerback, like, he looks like the first man up in training camp to me on the other side of Jalen Johnson.
I really loved sitting down at the table with Dan Roschar yesterday. I think I popped in right as you were asking him about Jonah Jackson and the year that Jonah had last year. And I thought his answer was so interesting and just provided some additional context, I think, to the struggles that Jonah Jackson had last year. What was your takeaway from what Dan Roschar said about maybe his dependability that people are writing off?
Yeah, Roschar, you know, he said, fair question. Like, I asked him point blank, like, do you look at 2024 as an aberration for a guy like Jonah Jackson? Or is there stuff you have to learn from that? And he's like, that's a fair question. Because he was one of the highly sought-after free agents, 16 months ago, less than that. And it went – everything that could go wrong seemingly did go wrong in L.A., starting with maybe a shoulder injury in training camp that impacted him at the start of the season, asking him to play center, which he can play, but it's not his natural position, at least in Roschar's estimation, and then quickly moving to guard, and then another injury, and you know, he said it's a situation where because of Ben Johnson's relationship with Jonah Jackson, I think we've talked about this quite a bit, that there's a belief and faith that hey, the head coach has trust in this guy, has an understanding, it communicates with the guy, and believes that you know, he can be a tone setter for him. And so he's going to have to go out and prove it, though, right? Mm-hmm. Because that's one of the reasons the Bears are in this mix. They use a second-round pick on an offensive lineman that his four seasons with the Bears were defined by an inability to be available.
Yeah, I also thought it was interesting what he had to say about Braxton Jones and the competition that you would have at that position because he was missing valuable time. And I don't know if he was talking about Amagaji. I wasn't there for it, but just reading through the you always wonder if there are any bread trails to follow to the NFL draft. I'm sure they know they have to come out at some point with someone that could play there. They don't want to have to have Tooney move that way, right? I mean, that's just not on the table.
Yeah, Tooney, that's right. I think that's a, you know, break glass in case of emergency type situation. But I thought he was positive about Braxton Jones, and he was pretty frank. He said, yeah, "Hey, if we don't make a move right now, as I look at it, Braxton Jones is the week one starter. You know, assuming that he gets back healthy, which they're obviously planning on, the timeline of which we'll have to wait and see." But he was kind of positive about Braxton, and he, you know, I think he called Braxton an overachiever, and he said, "But that's not. Don't take that as an insult. Like, that's a positive. When you say someone is overachieved, you're paying them a compliment." So yeah, I think we're all curious about where they're going to be at by, I'd say, next Friday night, right? A little more than a week from now,
right?
Where they're going to be at in terms of depth options on the offensive line, because it might not happen on Thursday night in round one, but you would think that that's something that they will address day two with some potential options.
I know we're sort of jumping around here, but I thought Eric Bieniemy was, you know, he kind of stole the show a little bit for me yesterday, Brad. It was really cool to, you know, you hear all these things about a man whose name has circulated the NFL for years, and then you finally get to meet him and learn about him, and his personality it's captivating. I just thought he shows so much personality, and you see why, you know, Andy Reid maybe describes him as, you know, one of the best leaders he's ever been around.
Yeah, he's going to be very demanding, I think, of the players, and it's a good thing. And he's an assistant on the staff that's got tangible experience. Like, this guy's been an assistant on a Super Bowl winner. He knows what it looks like, and he's spent time with a bunch of different clubs now. Like, we talk about his long tenure as a member of the Chiefs staff, but he's been in other places. So he's been in a variety of offenses. He's worked with a variety of backs, and we'll see. Most of the time, you know, you take a running back in the draft, you plug him in. We've got a pretty good idea of what they're going to get, but that position can be coached as well.
His name may be Bieniemy, but I would like to befriend him. No?
Moni.
Sorry, I was working on that, Brad.
That's
so dumb. When we look at the draft, as you mentioned, a week away, there seem to be even more names surfacing and more thoughts on who isn't going to be going. I'm talking about quarterbacks and thoughts about, I've probably seen like seven names linked to the Bears, including maybe four offensive linemen. It's just a crazy number of different options for them. When you look at the draft and you're doing these mocks, are they going to get, is there a player on the way who is going to be an impact player? In other words, will they be spoiled for choice at 10?
I think they've got to look at this and work through it, a bunch of candidates. If one of these kind of popular names to the Bears isn't available, and one of the keys to this thing could be could involve Shedeur Sanders. Like, is Shedeur Sanders selected in the top nine? Because the more quarterbacks you have, obviously, the greater chance there is that one of these guys in another position filters through to number 10. So if Shedeur isn't selected in the top nine, that improves the Bears' chances there, right? So, but yeah, I got asked by our friend Sam Farmer of the LA Times the other day to do a mock draft, and he sent me the list of the nine guys, and I'm looking at the nine, and I said, Sam, I'm in the middle of something. I'll get back in about 5 minutes. And then after about 2 minutes, I looked at the list of nine that had gone, and it was completely I'm like, I don't know what the hell I'm going to do. Like, Sam had taken like all the options that would be really easy to write three sentences for Sam and say, Sam, I nailed a pick for you, buddy. Here it is, and here's why. And I looked at it, and I looked at it, and I said, geez. I said, and this is one of the scenarios that they've been having to involve discussions about for 2 weeks now, right? Like, they've got to prepare for every scenario before them in that top nine, and then find a way to get a player that comes in and is impactful, right? They need a player that's going to make them better. And I think too often we get sort of sucked into this, well, is the guy going to be a starter? Where's the need? Like, the draft isn't for necessarily the 2025 season alone. Like, you need to have a longer view of it, because if you don't get a player with the 10th pick that's an impactful player for you as you're going into the 2027 season, you know what? You busted on your first-round pick back in 2025. So more important than exactly where he plays or exactly what he's going to do this season is how does this guy fit a longer-range plan for the organization?
It's a great point. And I think that that's kind of one of the fun elements to this, because I keep thinking this is going to be not a Ryan Poles pick as much as a Ben Johnson pick. I'm very curious about that relationship and how it impacts, especially the first pick in the draft. And then I wonder to myself, well, you know, listen to Dennis Allen talk about a good start. Was he told we're going to get you another defensive lineman? You know what I mean? And I'm reaching.
But. Yeah, but I mean, here's what I would say to that. Dennis Allen's been a head coach multiple times.
Yeah, yeah.
He's savvy and poised at the podium. Like, Dennis Allen's not going to get
not giving caught, you anything. Yeah.
Making some type of error like that. He's a smooth operator. Like, I enjoy talking to him. I think that you can learn from him. I don't think he's one of those guys that stands up there and is gives you replies but not answers to questions. But I also think he's way more polished than to tip
reveal
the
anything.
Draft plan 8-9 days out.
Yeah, we need a guy to say something like, well, when we take the tight end, or, I mean, whatever player we take.
Right, I mean, right. We'd prefer that. And it's funny you say that tight end, because, like, I was, like, what am I going to do? Back to this
Sam
mock draft where Sam Farmer asked me, you know, and I'm looking at it, I'm like, well, for the sake of conversation, I'll do something different here. And I went with Colston Loveland.
Love that.
Michigan man.
I was, and my reasoning for Sam was, you know, the head coach is an offensive guy. They can really kind of diversify what they're doing in terms of personnel usage and with formations. And so I kind of explained it, but it's really a guy that prior to that exercise, I hadn't thought a ton about with that 10th pick.
Yeah, that's interesting stuff. Thank you, Big Z. Great time as always.
Thanks, Brad.
Have a great weekend.
That is our guy, Brad Biggs, the football man of the Chicago Tribune.
Can't get enough baseball? Start streaming MLB Network today. Get up to 15 out-of-market games a week live on any device, plus 24/7 access to MLB Network's award-winning shows, including live game look-ins and exclusive player interviews. And hear live radio play-by-play from all 30 clubs with MLB at Bat. Enjoy the home of baseball from virtually anywhere. Plans start as low as $5.99 per month. Sign up now at MLBNetwork.com/stream. Available in the U.S. only. Blackout restriction applies. Visit MLB.com/subscribe for full terms and conditions.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Zoe. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.